And welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. It's a mailbag episode and new questions for a new age. Because you're the new Jacob, what locale do you add to the island? My name's Dave Gonzalez, and I insist, nay, demand, Lost at ABC and Disney and Lost 2 canonize my monkey hotel. I spent several seasons building it in a pandemic. It's very important to me.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I would like to open a petting zoo for traumatized Dharma bunnies, in which there will be no petting. Leave the bunnies alone. They just get to hop free and eat as many carrots as they want. Oh, but rabbits don't eat carrots. As much bunny feed as they want.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I would like to turn the temple into something useful. I'm talking manis. I'm talking petties. I'm talking a Neil-sized bathtub. Because we're going to clean up that water. I'm turning the temple into a day spa. And I'm probably going to spend quite a lot of time there. I'm going to deputize a bunch of, like, vice presidents of the island and spend a lot of time just chilling in the pool.
I dig that. And it already kind of has, like, a day spa feel. Like, I feel like I've been to places that are like, this is your, you know, ancient temple day spa, and you know they have the weird carvings and stuff.
Yeah, they have hot rocks already. I don't know what the hot rocks are for, but I'm told they're useful.
And they've got John Hawks there as the weird white guy who tries to be Eastern. Yeah.
We'll use the power of the clean temple waters to heal anything that ails you. You know, like if you, you know, ate some food that was expired, you can go to the temple and it'll fix you up.
Wherever did you get the inspiration for that, Neil?
From my life.
This podcast rewatched the entire ABC series Lost in both calm and storm sections. That means the calm section only discussed episodes that we had watched up to there, and the storm section were for people that had seen the entire series. We did it. Those are all in this feed that you're listening to this on, as well as our Game of Thrones coverage. This thing we did called the off-season tour when we used to cover television shows in between airing seasons. So we had to, you know, fill that time with other things. And all of you who we met during this rewatch, some of you went to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. Where you can contribute to us and get access to our Slack, and we formed a community, and it was fantastic, and we wanted to hear from you guys for this post-finale Lost episode. This episode's going to be a mailbag episode. You guys sent in your emails to hosts@stormpodcast.com, which I'm assuming, if you're listening to this in the future, you could still do. Just because this is the mailbag episode doesn't mean we don't have an email, necessarily. Yeah. We might not have an email. That's you know, different things. That's inside baseball about
it's very confusing. And the logins. Email will continue to exist.
That's correct. So by all means, you contact us, hosts@stormpodcast.com. You go to stormpodcast.com to figure out what's up with the storm. You can also go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, and there you can subscribe. And that is what actually gets you extra content. Not only do you get access to our Patreon-exclusive RSS feed, which has tons of audio content from all the way back when we started, but you continue to get new episodes like every week where you drop at least one bonus episode. We dropped a storm chasing this week. We're going to drop a storm chasing next week. There's still stuff here at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. But I think we should probably get to the emails. That's what people are here for. If you want us talking, we have like something over 197 hours of that. So, if you know, there's lots of stuff if you want to jump around. Joanna has done a lion's share of work here, finding the nuggets of excellence in all of your emails, which kind of makes me feel like you shouldn't have to read them if you don't want to. Do you want to do like a bouncing back and forth, a round robin?
I can read them as long as you guys promise to like respond to them. So it's not just me monologuing.
Oh, we were supposed to answer these questions? Oh, no.
Or just like your thoughts and feelings. Not all of them are questions, just your thoughts and feelings and stuff like that. So just as long as you promise that I won't be dominating,
sure,
I'm happy to read them. I have news for you guys, actually. This is breaking news to you that I forgot to tell you before we hit record.
Oh, wow.
But I did lock down the man in charge himself, Damon Lindelof, to do one last bonus episode.
Hey, Damon!
So Damon will be back in the feed sometime before the end. So
It's never in doubt, in my mind, at least.
I mean, I'm still interested to hear what Damon has to say, for sure, because I know
he said a lot. That's the thing, is like, any question around this was like, what more can Damon Lindelof really say about the Lost finale or Lost, etc.? Like, he's said it all a million times. So I guess my challenge to you folks listening, if you want to help me out, I kind of tried to promise Damon an interview that wouldn't bore him to tears. So if you have questions that you don't feel like he's answered, and I'm actually really looking for questions that might be kind of outside the scope of Lost, even though this is a Lost podcast, or has been a Lost podcast, you know, maybe just, I don't know.
Does he have a type of egg he cooks very well? A la Kimi.
A la Kimi.
Is that Kimi egg his sort of thing?
I don't know if you heard, but you can reach us probably, if we remember our password, hosts@stormpodcast.com. No, I know the password. And you can read, send in your questions for Damon. Don't put them in the Slack. I probably won't see them there. Send them hosts@stormpodcast.com. Send me your questions for Damon, and please help me not bore poor Damon Lindelof about this finale of a show that he has had to, I don't know, not defend is not the word, but talk about forever. Anyway, here we go. I just want to start with this email from Brandon, because it cracked me up. I don't know if you remember Brandon, but he...
I do remember Brandon, because I remember editing this episode and being like, should we keep this? I mean, I think we should keep this.
All right, so I'll read the email, and then Dave, you can explain the context. Brandon says, just checking in at the end to let you know I thoroughly enjoyed nearly being doxxed on the show. I deleted my company tag from my previous draft, but forgot after a full rewrite. When I was listening to the episode, I was in the middle of dealing with a pool that truly looked like the Dirty Temple pool. One thing I didn't expect was, despite listening on headphones alone in a small equipment room, my face was flushed with embarrassment when I realized my email was being read. Did any other emailers experience to this? Anyways, I've been caught up and listening week to week for a couple months now, and you three really did a great job with this series. Also, season 6 and the finale worked so much better for me this time around through. I think you're right that the misdirects of season 6 really do it a disservice on a first viewing. Brandon Pond, resident temple pool technician, temple maintenance department, #, pool is out of order. Sorry for the inconvenience. I really just wanted to read it for the signature that he put on this email. Dave, what's the context of this email?
So Brandon wrote in, and then Joanna, in reading his email, I guess because his last name was Pond, and he also works with pools, but proceeded to start reading his company signature, which, you know, is usually fine. Like, why wouldn't you want to know that somebody who's working on your pool is a Lost fan? That seems fine to me, you know. So ultimately it did get left in, but there was a moment, there is in my notes for that episode somewhere way back when, there's is, I'm like, make sure the pool guy's okay. We don't want to dox any pool guys.
Yeah, it was a real Ron Burgundy put anything on the teleprompter moment. Of which I'm proud to say we've only probably just had like one or two in the entire run of this podcast, which is a really impressive feat given how many emails specifically Joanna has read over the course of this rewatch.
Yeah.
And also live editing. She live edits spoilers out of the emails as she's reading them, which you could only tell if you've seen the email and then hear what Joanna says about it.
Yeah, his original signature is Brandon Pond, pool technician at, and then I won't say it now, but like it was like a real company, whereas I thought it was like some temple joke and I read it. Anyway, sorry for that time we nearly doxed you, Brandon, or maybe actually doxed you.
I will say this, when I start my temple day spa as the new Jacob, Brandon is at the top of my list
for
pool technicians, because we do need to get that pool cleaned up.
Yeah, you need to get that taken care of. All right. So Catherine and James, this email is from James, but Catherine wrote a similar email, so I'm just including her in this category about sort of this idea of what comes next, or more to the point, the idea of revisiting Lost as an older person, not Yeah, okay, anyway. James wrote, I didn't start watching Lost until season 3 of its original run. I was left with several important questions while going back and watching season 1, like where the hell are Nikki and Paolo? Side note, if you think the Long Night lighting was bad, try watching Lost night scenes in the jungle on a box TV with an antenna. For the finale, I appreciated it and loved it so much more this time around. As I'm growing older, I find myself lingering more and more on what comes next. I'm not religious, but I do associate with a sense of spirituality. Watching Jack accept his death during his conversation with Christian is one of the most cathartic scenes in all of television and will always hold a special place in my heart. A truly beautiful ending.
First of all, watching night scenes in the jungle on a box TV of Lost, like watching Lost on a box TV in the jungle, that sounds like an experience. I don't think you missed anything from the television show if you got to rewatch it. Like, I want that experience.
Oh, I thought he meant watching nighttime jungle scenes on a box TV.
Oh, I still want the experience I described.
I hope James was watching in a jungle, but I feel like he would have premised that for me in there. Allie has a similar email also that's right after it, so I'm going to read that as well. And then we can talk about this idea of revisiting Lost as we are older than we were the first time we watched it, right? So Allie says, you'll be happy to hear that I was 27, not 11, when Lost premiered and watched along in real time from the beginning. I even turned my husband into a Lostie. I love this story. That's why it's all in here. I even turned my husband into a Lostie on our first real date. I invited him back to my place so we could keep talking after dinner, which turned to smooching. And when I said something about moving too fast, he kindly pivoted and asked if I could show him that show Lost I had been talking about. Gotta love a guy who respects boundaries and shows interest in your favorite shows. So I obviously kept him around. We watched the pilot and he was hooked. I kept watching the show as it aired and he and I watched old episodes on DVD. On the night of the Not Benny's Boat episode, he showed up at my apartment mid-episode and I made him hide in the bathroom while I watched and cried and tried not to give away spoilers. He pretty much figured it out immediately. We eventually got on the same timeline and finished the series together. We pretty much hated the last season, The Temple Sucks Forever, and haven't attempted a rewatch since. Now, we have been married 10 years. We have a kid, live down the street from John Locke in Tustin, California. His street is real. The number is not. This rewatch has purged a lot of bad feelings I had about the show when it ended. I think I've grown up, and my feelings about the show have grown up with me. My reaction to the show is a bit of a metaphor for aging and maturing. When I first watched it, I was all about the spectacle and drama and the excitement of dissecting every moment for meeting. But as I get older, I care more about the bigger picture. I see love and pain and beauty and trauma and how all of those things can sneak up on us and throw us off our axis at any time. Whether we marooned on a mystery island or trying to raise a kid during a pandemic and climate crisis, same diff. So that's from Allie. So yeah, so I just wanted to check in with you guys. Maybe I'll start with Neil. Like, do you have any thoughts and feelings about who you were as a youngster when Lost first ended versus who you are now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's what, a full 10 years since Lost finished. I feel like I'm a completely different person now than I was when Lost first aired. And I feel like, especially down the stretch of the last couple seasons when I was, you know, trying to cover the show for, you know, a fairly fledgling website that was Film School Rejects at the time. I mean, it was only four years old in 2010. And, you know, I do think that I was one of those people, and I don't ever remember being mad about not getting answers, but I always did care about the minutiae, the mystery, the details of the lore of the island. And I still do. I still care a lot about that. And, you know, would definitely, like, I love the idea of sitting around and talking about, you know, who was there before the mother, for example. You know, these are great thought experiments. But when it comes to what I really, really care about with Lost, especially on this rewatch, it was just allowing myself to sort of feel my way through it. And to just allow, you know, I think as a person, I'm still not great with outward expressions of emotions or talking about my emotions, but I'm a lot better than I was 10 years ago. And so I feel like a lot of that has come, you know, full circle with this rewatch. You know, I cried through more of it than I definitely did when, you know, I was 20, whatever. 10 years ago. And, you know, I feel more connected to the characters. You know, and Jax, I think, you know, no matter how much you know about what's coming, the reason why Lost works is that you still can get caught up emotionally in what happens at the end, because it is sort of a long enough journey. It's a big enough investment that you can feel very emotionally connected to the story arcs, even the ones that I, you know, do not like from a structural plot standpoint, you know?
Yeah.
I still cry now when I see the Sun and Jin ending, even though I fucking hate that. Like I hate that they did that to those characters, but it's so well acted, and there's such a great investment that we've made in those characters as viewers that it still works really well. So yeah, I think it's been a more emotional journey for me than it was the first time around, and in a way that I like, because it shows me that I'm, you know, a slightly more emotionally mature person than I used to be.
Before I move to Dave, can I just ask you a follow-up question, which is, like, do you feel like, I know you were covering the show, there's a huge difference, I mean, we're kind of covering it for the podcast, but there's a huge difference between having to cover a show that's airing week to week in that sort of, like, urgent way versus, like, marinating in a rewatch and stuff like that. But in general, do you feel like you watch TV, or I assume you must, so how do you watch TV, like, differently now than you did 10 years ago when you were
Well, I feel like I have a better understanding of the way television is made than I did when I first started. You know, I think a lot of my coverage of Lost back in the day was very surface level, and it would get lost in tangents about island mysteries. And, you know, one of the things I think doing this podcast with the two of you has helped me is have a deeper appreciation for the craft of making good television, right? And I think that started with us going deep on Game of Thrones in a way that I had never really done in my career. And I think that really helped me prepare to, I think, do a much better deep dive on Lost this time around. You know,
Dave, what about you, who you are now versus 10 years ago?
Well, funny that you should pair that with the how we watch TV question. When the finale aired, I had the same job in television on the same show I have now, which is interesting. But it was the first and probably the only, given that I work remotely / the television landscape, zeitgeisty water cooler television show that I could talk about while I had a job in TV. Which changed entirely how I looked at television and how I talked about television, so much so that pretty much as soon as Lost wrapped up, I got the idea of doing something that eventually became the Fighting in the War Room Lost project. It's still up at fightingintheworoom.com/I-lost-the-filler. But the idea was I would take out the flashbacks of season one and try to see just how the on-island story played. And that involved breaking the show up into A plots, B plots, C plots, D plots, making a whole bunch of graphs about character story arcs versus season story arcs versus series story arcs, and basically breaking the show down to its, like, atomic television storytelling level. And that really helped me with, you know, Katie Rich and David Ehrlich and Matt Patches come to a better feeling with Lost than I did after the first time I had it. This rewatch was completely different because, first of all, because I felt like I had done the breaking down on the atomic story level. So whether or not, when you listen to that first Storm section, it seems like I'm making any sense, I felt like I was making sense. And that's the important thing. I wasn't uneasy with any sort of unanswered questions with Lost.
We've had a couple people when they finish go back and listen to that first storm and they're like, I have no idea what Dave is talking about. I want to be like, it's okay, it gets better.
The Valenzetti equations are variables to change anyway.
You just came in so hot, it was so cute. Okay, go ahead.
But this time, yeah, I got to engage with it a little bit more emotionally because not only is it still Lost and still good, but A, I'm older. B, the world entered a minor apocalypse. Yeah. Yeah. So all of these things helped. So not only were we doing a reassessment, looking back at a very old TV show. Like, I imagine if you go back and you watch any TV show from the turn of the 21st century, you're going to find a lot of the problems that we had with Lost. But I think it really holds up past the era of like mystery box television, past the era of like event finales. There are some media moments I have very distinct memories of when I participated in them. There's the time Joanna was at a Comic-Con and we listened to a concert over like live streaming together. That was amazing.
Yeah.
There was standing in the middle of my studio apartment watching Twin Peaks season 3's big Nine Inch Nails episode when I realized that episode was like for me and there was nobody I could share it with. So just having to like absorb that. There's the Sopranos finale going black and someone in the room thinking that the television had actually gone down. There isn't me actually watching Lost. What I remember of Lost actually ending was the people I was hanging out with. And I couldn't even tell you what we were discussing, but those people were my coworkers, and we were learning to become friends with each other, and then we would go on to work with each other, some of us, for 10 years. So it's that the end of Lost, as it always exists, is that work experience. Also because, as we learned in the previous episode from an email from my brother, my family sort of disconnected from Lost at the end, even though they were all really into it when I wasn't. So it was always a work thing for me. And that's another thing that happened with this third rewatch is my mom and my brother decided to join in. And they were not, my mom especially, was not a huge Game of Thrones fan. My brother, you know, was there, sort of. But this was a big time for them to engage with something that I do and to find all of you guys when they dipped into the Slack and they felt comfortable enough sharing their own stories. So really, every time you come around on Lost, there's something else to learn about it, just sort of by the nature that you get older.
That's so funny that you mentioned that you don't remember watching Lost. You remember the people that you talked to Lost about or talked to about Lost, because I have a sort of similar thing. I think I've mentioned before, but there was like one friend of mine who like we would just get on the phone and talk about Lost and theorize. And it was so funny. He called me yesterday. He and his wife are watching Justified. They're almost done with Justified. And he's like, I'm so excited to finish it and like find out from you why it's your favorite show. And I was like, did I tell you it was long? Justified is my favorite show. And he was like, I think so. I was like, well, it's top five, definitely. And I think a reason is Justified is the first show that I ever recapped regularly for Pajiva, like any show. And the shows that I like went deep on, and Justified's one of them, Breaking Bad's another, Game of Thrones is another, Lost Cora. Now is another, Cora. Like I wind up loving those shows more than other shows just because I spend so much time thinking about them, feeling about them, getting to know their creators, getting to know everything about them. Some of them like more so than others, you know what I mean? Like Westworld, I'm still frustrated about seasons 2 and 3, but I have really fond memories of season 1 and stuff like that. So, but like in covering a show, I fall more in love with it. Like before we started this rewatch, I would not have counted Lost probably even in my top 10 favorite shows. And now it's, I think, permanently in the top 5 because of this experience. So that would be my journey through Lost, mm-hmm. 10 years later. And I think also, in terms of like watching TV differently, I think I've just been through enough. I think especially that Westworld experience has really changed how I think about mystery box shows. because like season two of Westworld is technically a tricky mystery, but they just like did not come through with the emotion in the way they needed to. And so if, you know, like chasing your tail, trying to solve a show that isn't nourishing you emotionally, I've learned is just not something I enjoy doing.
How do you feel about Twin Peaks season three?
Another show that I did a podcast about. I love that so much.
I feel like that's the perfect balance between penetrable and impenetrable, because yeah, you feel like you could endlessly unwind it, but you're never right.
That show, that season is just like such a vibe. Well, and I also really want to rewatch it because I haven't rewatched it since my first time through, and it was airing during on the same night of a dang season of Game of Thrones. And so I like don't feel like I really got to soak in it the way that I wanted to, because I had to be like, okay, and head down on Thrones, you know, sort of thing. So
now over to the Seven Kingdoms again.
Yeah. All right. So this next email is from Regina. And she says, in a recent podcast, don't remember which one, it was mentioned that Joanna is Jacob, Dave is a man in black, and Neil is no one. Well, I vote to name Neil the Hurley of the group. Neil is always full of good vibes, wants everyone to be happy, and just seems like a genuinely kind person. So while Joanna and Dave fight it out, Neil sits to the side, sipping his tea, and chimes in with a dollop of humor / kindness / chaos every now and then. Love the pod. Can't wait to see what's next. So
I like this. I like that. Yeah, we ended in antagonism, Joanna. We started off as like three friends, and now it's like, Neil, you need to step in there. They're yeah, going too hard.
Dave and I will just destroy each other. So Neil, if you could just hold things down, that'd be great.
Sure. It's really dusty in here. I don't know what's going on in my office.
Oh, buddy, that's lovely. I wanted to name you the Hurley actually at the time, but I wasn't sure if that felt like too much of an emotional bid, like, but you are like, when I think about the, like, to talk about vibes again, when I think about like good vibes emanating from someone, keeping the mood light, one of my favorite Neil memories, it's actually not a favorite, it's just like something I think about a lot, which is I was in some sort of weird anxiety spiral, our first South By all together, the first time we were all three together ever. And I was talking to you, Neil, about like how I was really worried that Dave didn't like me at all, and that like we were all gonna like all break up and fall apart, and it was gonna be terrible. And Neil turns to me and he's like, "It's just not that serious, Joanna." I was like, "Oh," like I was mad at the time that was his response. But I think about that like when I get overly wound up about something where I'm completely projecting whatever, I just hear Neil's voice in my head being like, "It's not that serious, Joanna."
Nice.
Yeah. You're great.
Maybe I feel like sometimes I should go back and take more advice from that version of Neil these days.
Well, yeah, if you ever want to tell me that you're spinning out about something, I'm happy to be like, it's not that serious, Neil.
I guess I do. I will say that obviously Hurley is, I think, my favorite character on Lost, and, you know, somebody who's I relate to in numerous ways. But both in, I guess, in the sort of jovial, good vibes ways, but also about, like, you know, Hurley's doubt in himself. That's a very real thing that exists. And, you know, Hurley is one of those characters that ultimately just keeps going, right? And I get that a lot from people. People tell me that a lot about my own personality, that I'm one of those people that can just keep going, keep doing the work, keep trying to make things, every situation work. And I'm okay with that. I'm good with that comparison. That feels good to me.
You flow like water.
Yeah, I don't want to be the island god, and I don't want to be the person antagonizing the island god. I want to run the day spa.
If I was the man in black, I would never be in human form. Like I spent so much of my life trying to get rid of the feeling of my feet on the ground. Like, Jesus Christ, I would just be a smoke cloud all the time.
I mostly, and I don't really identify with Jacob super that much, to be honest with you. But I mostly identify with being antagonistic with Dave.
I like you as Jacob in the sense that you kind of accidentally make the rules. Joanna's like, what if we do it like this? And I'm like, oh, fine. At least we're doing something. And Neil's like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like when a bunch of us can't figure out how to sign in to, let's say, an email account that we all share. And then Joanna just gets right in because the universe has designated her as the overlord, whether she likes it or not.
Yeah. I've been kept out of the light cave of the email for too long. Let me in.
It's true. I strolled right into our email light cave earlier today. Okay. This email comes from Joshua. And it's just one of those, like, I just love stories about people going to extreme lengths to watch TV. Okay. This is one of my favorite stories to tell whenever Lost gets brought up. I live in northern Arkansas, and in 2009, we had an unbelievable record-setting ice storm. Really, any amount of snow or ice can cause issues for us, as it happens so rarely, but this one had the entire city shut down and without power for over 2 weeks. Neil, how long was your long blackout in Texas?
I mean, I don't even think it was that long, but it felt like it went on forever.
Our house was without electricity for 17 days, right as Lost Season 5 was kicking off. Oh. By the grace of Jacob, we had a medium-sized gas-powered generator that would run to heat up water or cook a meal, only for absolute necessities. Obviously, one of those necessities was the weekly viewing of Lost on two separate Wednesday nights. We happily traded gasoline for 2 hours of timey-wimey island goodness with no regrets. So,
food, that's incredible.
Water, Lost Season 5.
I mean, I love TV shows. I love movies. I don't know if I've ever loved something that much in the moment, like pop culture wise, that I would go to such great lengths to watch
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on youth. Like, there was part of me that, like, you know, laid down on concrete outside of a theater to get episode one tickets once. And like, now my old self is like, absolutely not. Oh my God. I also feel like,
I guess I used to wait in line for more stuff for sure.
This is like watching in a jungle, right? That's also an experience. Like, I kind of love this.
Some context is missing from this email is that he said that he bonded with his mom over it. She loves Sawyer. And his dimples, and he loved the show. So something he did with his mom in a bleak ice storm. And I'm like, for me, it's what I would say, projecting onto this, I'm like thinking of times in my life where I've had people come over and ritually watch something with me. That's part of my love for Buffy, is like when I was in college, for like the last couple seasons of Buffy, like all my friends who didn't even really care about Buffy would like come over and watch Buffy with me on Tuesday nights. I got them to do the same thing for Alias. And so like those shows, like that ritual of watching together. And I imagine, especially in a 17 day blackout ice storm, you're going to want the comfort of some sort of like bonding ritual.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's like something, a reason to look forward to Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that's one of the things that makes some of, especially the shows that we've covered. I mean, I know we've gone at length about how the Game of Thrones ending is a problem, but it's that shared experience, right? That I've always, I think, chased. And, you know, when I think about the shows in my life that I watched and shared with either other people in the room, you know, Lost was definitely, I had just moved to Austin. And so the group of friends that I had was a fresh new group of people for those last like two seasons of Lost. You know, I felt like Battlestar Galactica was one of the first shows that I watched where I interacted online with a lot of people as it was going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then of course Game of Thrones, which started as a thing that I would just watch with my, you know, housemates. And actually my housemate Theo and I both read the books simultaneously in those first couple seasons, and ended up being a thing that I podcasted about with you guys, and that we ended up going to San Francisco to do a freaking live show at the end with, you know, 100 some of our new friends who enjoy our work. And like, I think it's always been about, like, the best shows in my mind are the ones that you share that experience with someone important to you. And Lost, I mean, Lost in that regard, I think Lost is probably my favorite show of all time in that context.
Favorite show of all time. You say to the finale mailbag episode
It can't be Thrones, because Thrones got so weird at the end.
It can't be Thrones.
The show also be good.
The first four seasons of Thrones.
Right.
With forever in my heart.
Also, best memories of Thrones are of talking to people about watching it again. So, well, and that one time that we were all at a convention and sitting at like the talent table eating, and Nicolaj Coster-Waldau came in and realized we were all sitting and talking and just sat at a nearby table by himself and kind of eavesdropped. And it was like, yeah, look who's at the cool kids table now, Jamie Lannister.
And we all just felt the heat radiate off that man.
Oh my God, the talent table. Oh, we're so fancy. That was so weird. Because like the first year we went to Thrones, they put like the talent in a different room. And the second year they're like, whatever, just let the filthy podcasters mix and mingle with the actors. All right, this next one, Dave, I would love for you to read.
Hello, everyone. This is from Ed. Hello, everyone. I have loved your podcast since the Game of Thrones days and appreciated the reason to rewatch Lost for the first time since it aired. I have a question for Dave. How many beans do you think it would take to fill 20 semi-trailers? He has the answer for me. Here we go. It's 4 billion beans! And with that, that might be our...
I mean, how accurate is that, though?
I don't know.
20 semi-trailers is a lot of... That feels like way more than 4 billion beans.
Well, it's whatever it is, this is from the episode The Numbers in season one, where apparently this number was in some sort of bean guessing competition, and the numbers are... They add up to over 4 billion. It makes no sense. What sort of festivals are they having in Australia? Is it 20 semi-trailers? Is it just like a several swimming pools?
Is it just like a giant clear like jug of
beans? What are the bean receptacles? I mean, Dave needs to know.
I'm familiar with the concept. Like you know, they have like the, you go to like a town fair and they have like the guess the marbles thing.
But is it ever 4 billion?
I don't think I mean.
Beans?
Because, like, somebody has to count them, right?
Before they go in, right?
Right.
Oh, no.
Or as they're putting them in there.
I have so many questions about the bean competition.
Too many questions. And also, are they big semi-trailers? Are they like,
and
half
also,
size?
What kind of beans? Like, is it a garbanzo? Is it a standard pinto?
It's kidney beans are much larger. Oh,
exactly. What's the volume of the bean?
What's the number one type of bean in Australia?
I'm sure we'll hear from our Australian listeners. But I'm gonna go out on a limb and say cannellini. That's what I'm gonna say.
Oh, all right.
I know we'll hear the answer, but I'm gonna go out on a limb. No,
cannellini, which is
cannellini beans,
an Italian word, definitely just prevalent in Australia.
It's just some cannellini and some Vegemite mixed up. There you go.
Think about it.
It's a good snack.
All right. Then we have this email from Sarah. Sarah has a question about the feed, which I think we can answer, but I'm not sure. Sarah says, please, please, please keep your podcast available for those of us who got behind. I know that it will take me a while, but I want to continue to watch and listen, perhaps faster than once a week, with time to watch and listen to each episode and podcast and digest it a bit. So let me ask Dave, as far as you know, with whatever we can share about our future plans, is our feed going anywhere?
No. The feed that you are subscribed to right now will be here for as long as I can keep it here, even if through business shenanigans it goes somewhere, I will throw it back up somewhere else. The feed will not die. Dave doesn't delete podcasts ever.
Yeah, we didn't do all that work just to delete it off the internet.
I mean, this is a good question, though, because Dave Chen and I accidentally like just lost a Twin Peaks podcast that we did. We can't find it. We don't know where it is. It's just gone. But the storm will live on. So you can't stop the signal, Mal. It will keep going. So that'll be there waiting for you. And as Dave said, all of our Thrones stuff and the off-season tour stuff, all that exists if you want
Marvel stuff.
Marvel stuff.
Stephen King
stuff. Star Wars stuff. Yeah. Sarah also says, okay, so Sarah's from Hawaii. So she saw the premiere. They did like, they had like some recurring movie in the park event. And instead of a movie one week, they did the first two episodes of Lost. And they had the whole cast there and did like a big premiere on the island.
We were supposed to go to one of those before COVID happened.
I know. But Sarah says there was a big crowd in Lord of the Rings costumes for Dominic Monaghan, and even bigger crowd for Yunjin Kim, who was really a star since the Korean dramas play on regular TV channels here. And that's just something that I don't think we had ever really talked about, considered about Yunjin Kim's like notoriety. We were like, Dom was the clear like star, and to sort of maybe mainland American audiences he was, but don't underestimate K-dramas is the point of all of that.
So. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, my knowledge of Dom Monaghan was the only member of the cast that I really knew anything. That was one of the things that was really exciting about Lost, you know, when it first, because I remember one of the vivid memories I have of when it aired first was seeing the first promo on ABC, and I was watching something with my mom, and it came up and it was like from J.J. Abrams, and it was like, and it was just, and it was a sort of a very plain promo that was just all about the mystery of the plane crash, and it didn't have much of any plot to it, and it had a bunch of people that I didn't recognize but were sort of instantly compelling. And I think that's one of the reasons why I was sort of drawn to it, because, you know, I was ready for a mystery box show at that point. And then it was refreshing to see something that wasn't, you know, all the same Hollywood people that are on every other ABC show at the time. You know,
I think we probably talked about this when we covered season one, but I would say that I definitely knew Matthew Fox from Party of Five, and I knew Naveen from English Patient. That's kind of about it.
Yeah. Really. I think I also watched Party of Five and didn't remember Matthew Fox from Party of Five.
And Harold Perrineau. Actually, I think Harold Perrineau was one of the ones that I was really attached to
Romeo and Juliet
is very important to me. Yeah. I didn't watch Oz, but Mercutio is very important to me. He was also, I think, I'm pretty sure Harold Perrineau was also in a movie called Woman on Top. Where he's great. So I was like really into him. So I was really excited to see him. But yeah, I like, it's true. I mean, that's sort of the beauty of the Lost cast. All right, last section of Sarah's email where Sarah says about the ending. I was a big fan, but Sarah's email is really good. It's just super long, so I couldn't get to everything. But like, she's a teacher in Hawaii. She had a couple of her students appeared on Lost as like young versions of other characters and stuff like that. Like the experience of living on Hawaii while Lost is being made, I'm sure forever like makes you feel like a part of the show. So Sarah says, I was a big fan, but I'm one of the many who really didn't like what happened in season 6 and ended up super confused, annoyed. I think that many of the issues have been really well addressed on your podcast. I know that a big part of the problem for me was all of the super specific promises that the creators kept making about how they had a plan and knew all the answers when it began to be clear that most of what they presented was made up on the fly. And the finale left me and a lot of folks really angry. The show and the network did so much publicity to hype the mysteries and the promise of answers. I remember reading about Egyptian gods and solving some puzzles that the network put out, and none of that mattered or was ever addressed. In 2021, I know better than to get involved in stuff like that. But in 2006, we just really weren't that savvy yet. I still don't understand how all those slash sideways are really happening when the characters wake up from them. A favorite show. Oh my god, that scared me. You really got me on that one. Sarah says, a favorite TV reviewer that had been following and listening to started making fun of people who didn't like the ending as if caring about the mysteries over the characters made us shallow or not worth listening to. It was hard not to feel a bit betrayed. This also is the same time that Battlestar Galactica.
Do we want to say this about Battlestar Galactica?
A spoiler? Okay. Spoiler for Battlestar Galactica.
Okay, good. Yeah, go ahead. As long as people know that they can skip.
Oh my god.
That is a spoiler.
Neil.
This is the one that
Neil.
We've been...
Neil. What? Look how far our Dave has come. Dave just issued a spoiler warning.
I just
Dave,
feel
it's
like
a, it's about execution.
We talk about I know we talk about Battlestar Galactica a lot and allude to it, but like that's the that thing is. that makes me mad too. And so I feel like that's a reason. That's
this actually
the, they
is
were dead
a spoiler
all the time
too.
Of Battlestar Galactica. anyway, yes, look how much I've grown.
Like, remember when we had to fight Dave to do a comm section at all? Wow, this
sure.
is a big moment.
I would say everything's fine, just maybe not this part.
Okay. I'm still going to say it.
Okay, skip fine.
Ahead.
Go ahead.
Skip ahead. 30 seconds or whatever. This is also the same time that Battlestar Galactica was ending, and Starbuck, who had such a complex story, just went poof, she's an angel. It was so frustrating. I think that compounded the upset with Lost, with the Lost finale for some of us. Plus, all that temple stuff is so dumb. What a waste of Hiroyuki Sanada. Can't disagree about the temple. Sarah was asking about the feed because she's not caught up with us yet. So I'm hoping that once Sarah goes through the whole brainwashing watching Lost along with us, she will feel better about the final season. But I thought it was good to put that like Battlestar context of what was going on. I also just don't think it's this frustrated me about the end of Thrones too, of when those of us who didn't like the end of Thrones, the people who did like it, and it is fine to like the end mm-hmm. of Thrones, but the people who did like it were like, oh, people who don't like it just didn't get it. I'm like, I think I get it. I just think I don't like it.
Yeah.
So I just don't think it's, I don't ever think it's a great idea to like make fun of people for how they process.
Yeah. There's
the story.
There's a saying that I learned a while back in my life as a person who reviews things, and it's, you're always better off when you're not reviewing the audience. Like, review the thing, talk about the thing that you're watching, but don't assume that you know who's going to like this, who's not going to like this, or the quality of those people's tastes, because it's always going to be different than yours. And I think that to a great extent, Lost and BSG were the shows that really sort of drove that home for me, because, you know, I remember watching the sort of discourse about Lost happen in real time and never feeling great about it either way, like never feeling great about the way that some people defended it really heavily and some people really hated it. And, you know, there was clearly segments of folks who, as we talked about in the last couple of episodes, showed up, bailed on the show in like season three and then showed up for the finale and thought they had a good understanding of what happened, which is not entirely possible. But I will say this, you know, it felt like a terrible, like it felt very intense at the time, and it is nothing compared to the way fandoms exist and operate nowadays. Yeah. Right. It's one of those things where, you know, Lost may have gotten a little messy at the end and people got into some real knockdown, drag out fights on the internet with each other about it. But even that pales in comparison to the way like Thrones ended.
What happened with the last Star Wars trilogy?
Yeah, or what happened with the last Star Wars trilogy? Or honestly, what happens nowadays with just about anything that has an intense fandom, right? I mean, we see this with every new
Marvel
thing.
Imagine a world that we live in now where I am not excited about Batman movies coming out just because I don't want to do it again. I don't want right. to talk about Batman again. Thank you. I mean, right, Robert Pattinson, great. I hope it's good, but I'm like, you've killed me.
Yeah. Like one example this week, I had someone say to me that they were legitimately worried about reviewing the Spencer movie with Kristen Stewart, because it's like, what if I don't like it and I get like doxxed by the K-Stew fans? And that is so far more advanced than what people went through, like it's back when Lost ended. And I kind of miss the days when it was all just like on some forum somewhere in the comments section of somebody's blog, and that was it. You could just leave it there. But now it, you know, fandoms sort of follow you into the real world, and you know, it's distressing.
P.S. The case to you hive is no joke. No
I
joke
mean,
at all.
Yeah. I mean, I've
did it, we think they were? I yes. Chris and Stewart. Back is Adventureland. I was terrified of those people.
That's just for people who are listening who have not experienced them. I'm just letting you know that, like, Neil's writer is not out of left field.
Oh, no, I feel like I learned that lesson the year that the second Twilight film was at Comic-Con, and it immediately became impossible to get into the main hall at Comic-Con, Hall H, because, like, there were, like, Twilight K-Stew fans lined up for days.
Yeah, what a year that was.
That was a while. I think it was 2010, 2011.
All these people around before the Twilight panel being like, hey, Twilight fans, here's our dumb movie.
I mean, it was just that whole period, and this is also around the time Lost was ending, that it feels like the accessibility of the internet, the interconnected nature of social media was changing the way fandoms operate. So,
I think it was in a really wobbly place. Like, I still think that if it came out now or whatever, the Lost finale would be divisive, mm-hmm. but I don't think it would have had that cemented reputation. I think it'd be more like The Last Jedi, where I think there would be like people who ardently defend that and people who ardently dislike it. But I don't think anyone's out there saying like everyone knows The Last Jedi is the worst Star Wars movie, because people who don't like it know that there's a ton of people who love it, right? So it's complicated. I love that we just talked about Kristen Stewart on this Lost Mailbag episode. Should we talk about some other names of note?
Sure. Let's talk about some other names of note.
Listen, so this is the part of the podcast where we like to thank our small council / candidate, our Patreon subscribers, $10 level or above. We got a ton of new folks who flooded in at the last moment, I think, to watch the finale with us. So hope it was worth the money. Glad you came. So let us start with our newcomers. We've got Nathan, Jade, Chris Chapman, a.k.a. Biker Amazon Warrior. Chris, I hope your trip to London went well. Megan McLeod, Sandra Maslia, Tertaley, Connor Rock, Shruti Marathe, Ellen Johnson, Scott T., is that a Tad Logan? I think it's Tad.
Yeah.
Adrian Martinez, Sean Carpenter, Heather Carpenter, Caleb McKee, Christy Rice, Jillian Walsh, Catherine, Sarah Trites, Aaron Gworick, and Allison Heishman. Thank you all so much.
And I would like to add to that thanks Andrew Bird, Kelsey Lee Measure, Alex, Matt Pilari, Peter Hobson, Lisa Romney, Lawrence Medina, Serafina Cobain, Justin Way, Lorenzo Siandra. Gotta scroll, otherwise I'm gonna like mix all these names up, which could be cool, but not what they paid for. Monica Wolf, Fainting Violet, Andrea Rodriguez Garcia, James, Dan Pozo, Stephen Lear, Jess, Amy, Mother of Dragons and Breaker of Chains, Amanda Rhodes, and Natalie Gershman. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Susan Monk, Lindsay Mitchell Ernesty, Jody Dawkins, Lex Gernon, Annette Minari, Sverir Sigfusson, Mitch, Felidia Featherbottom, Matthew Punamali, Heather Todd, Alex Wankus, David Rinna, Jack Sinclair, Jorge Dr. Gents, Emma Maltz, Kelly Donahue, Abby Ademchik, Michael Weir, Josh Darby, and Melissa Shippey. Thank you all for coming on this journey with us and supporting us right up here to the end of our Lost rewatch.
You guys might remember that Melissa is the one who made that like incredible oil painting of Thrones for me that hangs over my fireplace. And I was just looking at it today being like, is there a scene in Lost that I can like commission her to make, so I have another oil painting to commemorate a podcast journey? But I couldn't think of like a shot that.
Oh, I know.
Oh, there's.
I know, because I've been wanting to draw it so bad, but I do not have the talent.
What is it?
You do Locke on all fours, looking down, and the blast of light coming up out of the hatch.
Oh, okay.
You got dark greens, you got light, I would love to see an oil painting of that period.
All right. What do you think, Neil?
Yeah, I think, or like a Locke and Jack looking down either the hatch shaft or into the light cave, because I think there's a lot of good lighting in that one.
Yeah. I thought for a second you were going to say Falcon Punch, which is also
Falcon Punch.
I was thinking of light cave. It's just like I don't care. I like Jack, but like I do in the end, I do. But like,
here's a question that I'm going to go and look up because I'm pretty sure I have all these screenshots on my computer. Is there a good one, like a wide shot of Hurley and Jack as Jack is giving Hurley the water bottle?
I love that. I was also thinking, because like, I think the light instinct is so good because Melissa did such a good job with the light. For those of you who don't know, it's a scene from Thrones, Night of the Seven Kingdoms. Mm-hmm. Where like our faves are sitting around a giant glowing fireplace. There's a lot of beautiful stuff with light in it. So I was also thinking of like glowy cave or something like that. But then I was also like, maybe just like the smoke monster in the jungle would be cool or something like that.
Smoke monster, the church. I mean,
Christian frame by the door.
You know, if you do the church, you're constantly going to be walking by it being like, where's Nadia?
Why the fuck is she
for
here?
All time? But yeah, I mean, because the scene that from Thrones is the one where Brienne is being knighted, right, by Jaime.
Well, it's just them all sitting around the fire with sort of their backs to the camera and the fire is glowing and beautiful. Well, anyway, sorry. I if you have any thoughts about beautiful shots from Lost, please, you can email us or you can
tweet at
Twitter
us.
Or whatever.
I think if I had to pick one, it would be the shot we talked about with the finale, Jack's POV as he looks up and sees the plane flying.
Oh, that's a good one too. That's like
that
the
I
ending.
Think is almost, I don't want to say for sure, but that's definitely my top three favorite shots of Lost.
I did Google Lost One Perfect Shot to see if I could get any inspiration from your Twitter.
Well, there's a bunch of them.
Yeah. All right, this next email. Dave, do you want to read this next email?
This is from Annalisa, one of the producers on one of my shows. She went to visit after we finished the current season we were working on. She went to Hawaii to visit some sets. And she sent me some pictures. They're all really great. The most notable thing I think that I noticed was the Dharma Village has been painted blue, like still the same shacks, but they're blue and it's now a YMCA camp. And my mind instantly went to like, wouldn't it be cool if you ended up going to like the YMCA camp that's like the Dharma Village? And I'm like, okay, that's 15 years ago that it was introduced on television. I bet it's just the counselors who are like, hey, we're in the Dharma camp. I bet the kids at the YMCA camp have no idea.
The kids who are all probably named Sawyer.
Exactly. All these kids named Sawyer. They don't know why. They're hanging out in the Dharma camp. Anyway, this is directly from Annalisa, who says, I'm so glad I did this tour and recommend it to anyone, even casual Losties. It's such a great way to see the island, too. We used KOS Tours, which is at losttourshawaii.com. And our guide was an extra in several episodes, so we got an insider-ish perspective. I just wanted to thank you all so much for giving me a reason to revisit the series when you first started. I binged it over the summer of 2019 and have since been doing a third watch week to week with the pod. There was a lot of fun and nostalgia that came with rewatching something I was obsessed with in my 20s, unlike some of the baby listeners. I was 24 when it first aired. But what I wasn't expecting was how comforting the show would be during the pandemic, and not just because I was living Desmond's quarantine life with Peloton and Daily Harvest smoothies. So losttourshawaii.com, guys, if you end up heading there, seems to have some extras on staff, adds some bonuses.
I feel like either Peloton or Daily Harvest has really, really missed an opportunity to do a reenactment of the Lost season 2 opener.
Really, anybody who wanted to hire Henry Ian Cusick to make a quick pandemic commercial missed out on an opportunity.
And get the license to that Mama Cass song and just like roll on forward. Yeah. All right. This is the email that kind of broke me when I was reading the email. So here we go. This is from Ian. Ian writes, I cut some of Ian's email, but Ian writes, I had never considered myself a deeply religious person, and I still do not. But the Lost finale awakened my spirituality in a way that going to synagogue had not, going to church had not, and studying for my bar mitzvah had not. Christian Shepherd's line to Jack, the most important part of your life was the time you spent with these people, to me speaks to the heart of the human condition in such a simple and profound way. Of course, what life is all about are the relationships you have with other people. Of course, being together is all that really matters in the end. It sounds so simple when laid out like that, but it's easy to forget in the endless day-to-day stress, and drama of life. Since I watched the Lost finale at the tender age of 13, I have strived to live my life by the ideals expressed in that final episode. When I am down or having a bad day or feel like life is a pointless exercise in futility on a burning planet under an intransigent government,
snaps,
I think about the people I love and how much we mean to each other, and I always feel a little bit better. Maybe that sounds simple and stupid, but it helps me see through the darkness. And for that, I am grateful, and I credit Lost with giving me that mindset from an early age. I understand the feeling of people who watch the show for the answers, but just like in life, while you may not find the answers to all your questions, if you're lucky, you can find people that make your life worth living. I'm still a practicing Jew, and I still go to church with my grandparents every Christmas. But when I think about my own spirituality, I don't think of a higher power or a savior. I think about the people I love most in this world, the good times we've had together, the times we have still to come, and I think about the ending of Lost. As silly as it sounds coming out of my mouth, Lost is the closest thing I have to a religious text I believe in. While I still think the most likely thing that happens when we die is absolutely nothing, if I get to choose what to believe, then I choose to believe that there is a non-denominational bardo / purgatory where we work out our problems, achieve a closure we never got in life, and then get to go find the people we love all over again. In the end, I see Lost as a fantasy show with maybe the most fantastical ending of all. It ends with the ultimate dream that all of this meant something, that life was worth living, and that no matter what you achieve or don't achieve, the real accomplishment was that we all did it together, because no one does it alone, Jack. That's for me.
That's a good one.
And that made me cry. I guess the follow-up question I would have for that, maybe like starting with you, Neil, is like, do you have any, are there any shows that exist that sort of gave you or even like a book or a movie or whatever that gave you some sort of like foundational philosophy that you've carried through in your life?
What a question.
So if you could sum up your life based on one piece of pop culture, Neil.
Sorry.
No, I mean, I think that what's great about fiction in its many forms and its many mediums is that the best of it, you know, and Lost is definitely the best of it. Lost is definitely in the top tier of its medium. Is something that you can take a little bit from that helps you in your life, you know? And I don't know, I feel like I take a little bit from everything that I really love. I always like to say this thing that I'm like, you know, I don't consider myself like an intense fan of any one thing. I'm a fan of storytelling and a fan of the way stories are concocted and built and transmitted in different ways, whether it's as a book or as a TV show or as a cinematic experience that, you know, can be shared. So yeah, I think there's just a little bit of, I don't know if I've ever had anything impact me as powerfully as Lost has impacted Ian. But I love the search. I love the continued quest to find that, you know? So that's where I'm at.
I know that Damon Lindelof doesn't listen to the podcast, which is great because then we could talk and I don't feel like I'm accidentally insulting anybody. But as a creative, I feel like this is the goal, right? Like somebody who could, you have a story and all you really know is there's a polar bear on the island and there's a monster in the jungle. And what you come out with is this that helps somebody like live their life better. Like, we brushed against this because we happened to have a rewatch pandemic or a rewatch of Lost during a pandemic. But the fact that we were even to get close to, we do it all together because no one does it alone in podcast form, is a fantastic achievement that, you know, is the ultimate goal, I think, of creating like some sort of art. If you could create that type of empathy that people find meaningful and can base their life around. So was it maybe Fight Club for me at some point? Maybe. But like, that doesn't mean you can't grow beyond that. That's what good art is supposed to do. And maybe when you engage with that good art at different ages, you get different things out of it. I think Ian has a very good read of what to take out of Lost. You know, instead of like, don't fly over the Pacific, which you could also take from watching Lost. So like, yeah, that's the goal, Ian. I think everybody involved with Lost would be thrilled that that's what you took away. And I'm so happy that you were able to not only seemingly correctly read the series, but regardless, take something positive out of television and put it into your own life. That's a personal thing that I wish I did more often.
And I think, I think all of us here are, would define ourselves as some manner of atheist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least agnostic. Yeah. I was raised with no, religious or spiritual guidance. And, I think for me, story, you know, to sort of echo, to cheaply knock off what Neil said, like, I think story is the reason why a reason why I read all the time is because story not only takes you away from maybe a reality you don't want to be in, but also like there's nothing better, I think, in this world that for building empathy than devouring story after story after story and putting yourself in the position of these people who are like you and who are unlike you. And empathy, I think, is just And we've talked a lot about Lost as a story about empathy, but I think empathy is just like my defining principle in this world. And I think I got that just from watching too much television and reading too many books and watching too many movies.
I'm glad you got there because Neil and I were definitely raised something and then became traitors. So if you could get there without the raising, that's the important part.
And I think also, if I had to pick one thing to answer my own impossible prompt, and it's uncomfortable because of all the fucking Joss Whedon shit, but like Buffy was really foundational for me in terms of like, you know, women having steel in their spine, against adversity. And there's this one scene in, Buffy season 3, where the antagonist says to our heroine something along the lines of like, you know, take away your friends, take away your superpowers, take away blah, 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 like what's left. And then she goes, me, and then she jumps up and kicks his ass. And it's just like, it's a great moment.
And Joss Whedon so recognized the power of that phrase that he gave it to Captain America.
Story, it's really powerful, and it's why a lot of us spend as much time as we do here. So there you go.
For sure.
All right, speaking of story, let's play a what if game. Justin has some post-island questions for us. Justin writes in, I have a finale question for y'all. Do you think Sawyer reunited with Cassidy and Clementine on his post-island life, and did he end up a good dad for his daughter? I personally think that after all he's been through, I hope that he realized the effects of being a bad dad and that he knew he should be there for his daughter. It is strange, though, that neither of them are in the sideways with him, but I think that his love for Juliet triumphed over his love for his daughter, that it worked for Juliet and James to reunite during that classic moment of having them exchange, having an exchange over the vending machine. Yeah, so, okay, never mind. Neil, what do you think?
Well, I think we've discussed the commune theory,
yes, right,
which I think is my favorite, which is that after leaving the island, James Ford, no longer calling himself Sawyer, goes off to start live in a cul-de-sac, I guess, or on a I like to think that they live out in like, you know, way out in, you know, rural like Iowa or something. And it's Kate and Claire, and Claire, you know, they give her space to sort of recover from the trauma that was inflicted on her of being left alone on the island and messed with by island gods for several years. And they raise Aaron, and Cassidy's there, Clementine's there. And, you know, I mean, think about what situations did Sawyer thrive? And he thrived as sort of the protector of his people when the others were his people back in the 1970s. and he thrived as sort of helping sort of keep order. And I think he could serve that purpose for the commune, but also I think, yeah, he would be a much more chill dad, and he would be, you know, a font of wisdom for the kids that are being communally raised. And yeah, I like that for him. I like a slower, less anxious, less murdery life for Sawyer in the end.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Neil. Post LaFleur, Sawyer is domestic. He feels uncomfortable outside of that situation, which is why he sad boy search and destroys, goes back to the Dharmaville to throw his ring off the thing. So yeah, the second he could go back to being domestic, I think that's a comfort
but
space for him.
I also think that after this experience, especially the folks that escape on the Ajira plane at the end, they're never going to be right in society again. Like, these aren't people that could go live in the suburbs or live in a city, in a, you know, an urban setting, because of the sort of intensity of the experience they had on the island. So it really does, the whole commune idea is like they all just live out in the woods together and they take care of each other and it's very chill, and you know, then that's it. You know, and that's okay. I don't know. Especially having lived through this pandemic, that doesn't sound so bad to me. It probably would have sounded terribly boring to the version of me that existed when Lost first aired. But nowadays I'm like, I don't know, commune where everybody just sort of, you just chill out with the people you love and take care of each other and don't deal with the rest of the world, sounds okay to me.
Yeah. I don't think you live with Locke and kill his father without absorbing some of the you need to be a good dad thing as well. So I feel like when he does go back, much like Kate, the island has squelched their need to be on the run, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is a problem. That is an flaw in the Bardo concept, which we discussed about Hurley. Hurley's like sideways soulmate being Libby, meaning like Hurley never found another person. Like, the whole idea of the sideways is like it's for these people and the time that they shared together. But it really does, the tricky premising of it means that whatever life they built post island, which we hope happened for all of them, including Miles, who's not in the church, feels like the show is saying it didn't matter. And that is a little sad. So, you know, I hope.
Yeah. Separate Bardos for the children.
Yeah, I mean,
separate Bardos for the children.
That's why you have to believe an infinite number of Bardos. So like Hurley is in this Bardo, but he's also got a Bardo with like his later in life girlfriend.
Great.
And maybe
Dave,
Libby.
When
maybe
Dave
Libby's
dies.
Also there. I don't know.
Maybe Cheech never dies.
Cheech is eternal.
Cheech is eternal. The all Dave lives on.
All right. Shruti, queen of the commies and the prediction docs and all that, has sent us a lovely long email. And this is just a snippet from it. But she wrote, I've been thinking a lot about Desmond and Penny since I realized the constant was coming so early in season 4. I had heard about Des and Penny being this perfect symbol of love and the constant being a perfect episode of television, and I felt really nervous because up until that point I hadn't seen much of them. The constant was still great, and I'm still super invested in Penny staying alive when all these dads are trying to kill her, but I still feel like I know nothing about her. The fact that her defining quality in the pod is her love of Christmas really speaks to how we never really get to know her outside beyond being the love of Desmond / Christmas's life. Juliet, on the other hand, not to pit relationships against each other, is a fully formed, empathetic, smart, beautiful character. Do y'all think that's why on rewatch Sawyer and Juliet feel like the runaway couple against Penny and Des? When the series first aired, were more people obsessed with Des and Penny? We also had a betting... So I'm going to get to that second part. But yeah, Juliet and Sawyer versus Desmond and Penny, with some time and distance and rewatch. What do you guys think?
I mean, I definitely think it tracks. And I think that the reason why I love, at least, Desmond and Penny is the potential of it. Because their whole relationship is about the potential of it. Like, if Desmond and Penny could just find each other, they'll be okay, right? And then you can believe in the happily ever after if you want. So it's always about the potential. Whereas Sawyer and Juliet feels like something that we, the audience, earn in watching Lost. Like we get extremely invested in those characters before they're together, I think, even though we don't know Juliet for as long as we know Sawyer prior to them getting together. And then we get such a good taste of what their relationship was like, and then it ends tragically. So I feel like that's the difference, is that the Sawyer and Juliet thing feels like something that everybody involved earns all the way around. And Desmond and Penny is, we really don't get a good idea. Like, we know these sort of, signposts of their relationship. Like, we know that Penny searches for him and they find each other, and then they get married and they have a kid, and then Desmond goes back to the island and is stuck in a well for a while. And then we assume that there's a great future after that. But it's always to me been about the potential that those two have and are working towards. Whereas we get a really fully formed, as Shruti says, fully formed version of a relationship with Sawyer and Juliet. And, you know, I think knowing the end, knowing where that relationship ends, I think makes it more emotional for the audience, because, you know, we still don't know where Penny and Dez ended up. We really don't know how long Dez stayed on the island again before he was able to make it back to her, you know?
What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think we talked about it a little bit on the storm in season 6, but Desmond's storyline ends when he finds Penny and has a child. Like, that's where we want him to be. We don't want him to come back to the island, but he kind of has to, because he's suddenly a main character in this television show. So they shoot him in the milk and put him in a submarine. but I think because of that, like, what should have happened was a handoff between these love stories, right? In season 5, then you start caring about Sawyer and Juliet because Desmond and Penny have been resolved. But because they feel like they need to keep Desmond around, but also they don't want to focus on him so much so that we never know if he gets off the island canonically, is just how it happens. Whereas that entire finale is building the vending machine moment, which is the conclusion of the arc for Sawyer and Juliet, which is ultimately more tragic than Desmond and Penny, who were kept apart for a long time by some assholes, but did get to get together and have a kid, whereas those two had to die.
Sorry, go ahead.
But, you know, none of the rules apply to Desmond, so I see why the constant still keeps coming up. Because I do think that ultimately Shruti's right. The Sawyer Juliet lands better. But I don't take back any hype I tried to pump in for the constant. I think that's still an episode of television that works really well.
No, it's an incredible episode of television. I think it pales a little bit when you're watching it in 2020 or 2021, whenever we watched it. I'm sure there have been attempts. It has influenced things that have come after it. So I'm sure there are things, you know, like I think of that episode of Westworld. Why am I keep talking about Westworld? There's an episode of Westworld, Akichita, that like reminds me a lot of the constant and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think there have been things that have sort of chased that constant vibe. That once you've seen the things that come after it, then seeing the original doesn't have that much as much power. I think coming into the constant unhyped, it will hit you harder and all of that. But I completely agree. And I think what's also true is when I go back and rewatch shows that I loved around this time or earlier, there is this storyline. You think of like Can't Hardly Wait, one of my favorite like teen comedies. And Jennifer Love Hewitt's character is like Amanda, has like some texture to her. But mostly she's the object of Preston's affection, even Embry. And those stories, which we were told over and over again about this sort of like yearning man and the object of his affection, is something we were really trained to love at the time and for decades previous, like that. And now when I go back and watch it and that female character is underdeveloped, I'm not as fond of it. Or if the yearning is such that like Frasier, one of my favorite sitcoms of all times, and I was like so into Niles and Daphne, and like I rewatch it now and I'm like, I'm still into Niles and Daphne, but like Niles, it's creepy how long he was hanging on to a woman who had no interest in him. That's like a little creepy. That's obviously not what's going on with Desmond and Penny, but it's like that sort of dynamic was something I think I've definitely brought up on some podcast, that essay, Your Princess is Another Castle, that was about sort of this kind of incel culture. Okay, I'm not calling Desmond an incel, but like it's all of it sort of tied into this idea of like your romantic hero and the woman who is the goal. Right.
It's a misreading of medieval chivalry, which we use to make stories about how to behave yourself, and now become I act well, therefore I deserve blank.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas right? Now I think when we're watching television, we're as viewers now, 10 years later or more, I think a story about two flawed, messy people who we get to know very well separately, finding some sort of whole together, I think that lands better. So, Dez is also, it's hard to explain the allure of Dez. Desmond was like such a popular character, and there's really just like, honestly, not like there's so much stuff around him that's so great, like the season two opener, and Henry Ian Cusick is very charming and his shirt is great, and like, you know, the constant is fabulous, but like as a character on an arc, like I don't know, Desmond dropped in my rankings big time on the rewatch. So I still like him, but
yeah, and I think it has a lot to do with what Dave described, which is that, you know, Desmond is probably the first character that arced out.
Yeah.
And they kept him around anyway because they needed someone to be sort of outside the rules of time. And
also because he was really popular.
Yeah, he was really popular. Henry Ian Cusick was at the top of his game, and he was worth showing up for. So I think, you know, it's that constant battle between what is good for a story and what is good for the commerce of making television. But you know, I don't mind that they kept him around. You know, I feel like there's probably better things they could have done with him, but yeah, Dez and Penny will never be James and Juliet in my mind. I'll tell you that much.
All right. And then the second part of Shoot These Email here is about the sort of betting series that some of our Patreon or Slack members were doing. And she writes, we also had a betting series on basically what aired were, oh no, on basically what questions will be answered, but I honestly don't know if some of these have been answered. What do y'all think? So here's one. Who is the they Jacob's referring to when he says they're coming when he dies?
The candidates.
The candidates.
Yeah, I think it's the candidates, and it's also like at that point, I feel like they thought that Ilana and her gang were going to be more important than they ultimately ended up being, where it was like, but yeah, I think in Jacob's mind, the most important people are the candidates. So it has to be the candidates.
Yeah. I think there are three options. There's like the candidates, the bodyguards being Ilana and Brahm and all those people. And Widmore.
Oh yeah. Chuck
and Zoe.
Right. Who cares about Chuck?
Jacob with his dying breath is like, Zoe's coming.
Jacob knew that Charles Widmore was not going to be very useful at the end.
It's okay. He brought Desmond, who's the key to something. All right. Shruti says, why does Claire have to be the person that raises her baby? Was this supposed to be a direct tie to Kate raising Aaron? Raised by another. Really? I never had an answer to this. What do you think?
I think I have one for this.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
Well, I think that this is part of the Jacob's trauma that he then imprints on everything that happens on the island, right? So we've talked about the island having this thing about pregnant women, and what we ultimately, I think, learn is that it's Jacob's mommy issues coming out. So this idea that Jacob, having been raised by someone who wasn't his mother, would then have a feeling about that, right? He would have a take, and that take, because he's the island god, sort of becomes the rule. And that is that, you know, babies are meant to be raised by their biological mother, which isn't necessarily a thing. Like, it's not a great, necessarily a great policy for everyone. So I feel like that, at least from a story perspective, had to have something to do with it, where it's like this island god's feelings about motherhood have created rules, you know?
Dave?
I think it's just an asshole psychic.
Who's a fraud.
Who's a fraud. Yeah, that guy is too. Trying to adoption shame poor Claire, like everybody does. Like, fucking let her do what she wants. Anyway.
Yeah, there is something to be said about, you know, just the general idea of men wanting to regulate what women do with their bodies, that comes home with the Claire stuff.
That Mapother energy.
Mapother energy.
All right. What is the end Jacob is referring to when he tells the man in black in the 501 cold open? It only ends once. Anything before that is just progress.
That is the conflict between him, Jacob, and the man in black, which is the passing on to another island god, which I don't think is the end he's referencing. I think the end he's referencing is when they both finally hurt each other.
The end of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I think that it's also that, yeah, their conflict ends when they both die, or when one of them dies, and they can only die once, even though they're island gods, you know?
So my memory of there's only one end, it only ends once, anything before that is just progress, is like when the man in black is watching him bring the black rock to the island, right? Like they're sitting
right, and he's like,
beach.
What's the point? They just all come here and die.
Yeah. All right, last question. What were the rules between Charles and Benjamin in The Shape of Things to Come? Ben says, you change the rules to Charles during their nighttime tryst. Does that ever get explained?
No.
Okay.
No, and I think
this is, we need a others org chart because these are made up rules.
I think that, yeah, the even worse part about that is that what we ultimately learn about Charles and Ben is that they're just guessing at what God, at what Jacob the island god wants. Because
aren't
didn't
we all?
Talked. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you
both
know,
both of them were banned from the island according to them. And right. Then they both end up back on the island.
Yeah, we learned that Jacob didn't even care about crossing Kate's name off in the end. Like, you know, the rules were so open to interpretation that these two guys who are obsessed with power, obsessed with being able to control the island, just started imagining things, you know? Such as life.
A line of chalk and a wall, Kate.
Right?
I'm not mommy tracking you at all.
Shut up, Jacob. You brought me here magically.
Right? And I think, you know, what we learn about the rules themselves, especially in the finale, is that it's just whatever the person in charge feels. Like, those are the rules. You know, like, Hurley can decide that people can leave the island. You know? So it's like, the rules are what we make them. You know, just, you should make rules that help each other. Right.
You want to drink wine to become the protector? Great. Just some water? Great. Make sure it's fresh water? Not even that. Just whatever.
Puddle water
out of a 3-year-old water bottle? Sure. Why?
Do we need a Latin chant? Nope.
Nope.
Why? Jack doesn't speak Latin.
Yeah. I mean, I think the ultimate point is that the rules are what we make. And if we get too caught up in making rules, sometimes we can't see, you know, it blinds us to the real sort of human connections. Like, imagine how good of friends, or how useful and productive Chucky Widmore and old Dr. Linus could have been if they had worked together to make things better on the island.
Yeah,
you know?
The rest of Shruti's email had something to do with, like, Charles and Ben are star-crossed lovers. Also, I want to say, I didn't include this, but I thought you guys might get a kick out of it. Shruti was talking about how, like, the end of Lost is, she's having a really tough time with it because she just got, like, really invested in it, as we can all relate to, pandemic vibes. But she cited that scene from Community where the dean says, it's my whole identity. I don't know if you guys remember that. Anyway, great moment in Community. Great quote from Shruti. Yeah, it's and I think the end for Ben, when that gift that Ben gives Hurley of, like, you can make your own rules, one of the greatest redemption arcs for a character who has done a massive amount of bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. People talk about like Sawyer on a redemption. Like Ben, the fact that Ben lives and we're not mad is, I think, mostly because he helps Hurley when Hurley feels really scared and lost and confused.
He has killed the most people on that island.
Oh, right. For sure.
But he helped Hurley, and we love Hurley, so we're like, okay, Ben.
Yeah, I mean,
well, the reason why people he killed were bad.
The reason why Ben is not ready to move on at the end in the sideways is that he expects that when he walks through that door, the real Henry Gale is going to be waiting for him.
And like the nice hippies of the Dharma Initiative,
right? Oh yeah, and all the people he slaughtered from the Dharma Initiative. Yeah,
what's her face with the weed brownies? It's going to be like, excuse you. All right, so Larry wrote in, and there's a visual here in our notes that I'm afraid I can't share with people, but Larry wrote in about the cork, and he says, someone may have already pointed this out to you, but the heart of the island with the cork is shaped a lot like a Shiva lingam. Amongst other things, people pour water, milk, or honey over it to soothe Shiva. And it does indeed look like...
It does look like the cork.
It really does. Cork. This is one that I had not previously seen. And,
me neither.
You know, I think you can look at it one of two ways. Either Lost, the writer's room just went deep on all manner, all different varieties of religious iconography and just threw a lot of stuff at the wall, or they were actually trying to say something about what humanity as a whole believes, right? And that it's like we interpret things differently, you know, based on where we're born and how we're raised, but we may all be believing in the same thing here.
That and, is a super nice take on it, Neil.
Right. I mean, that's the generous take. But there is a lot of them there's a lot of religious iconography. And I think that that's okay. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I choose to believe the more generous read that one of the things they were trying to say with this show at the end is that no matter what you believe, this sort of essential nature of human faith is the same.
Dave says this was a photo on a reference board for a set designer that got a breakdown for the finale 2 weeks before it happened. And is like, cork, it's a literal cork. Well, there's this Shiva Lingam thing that maybe, you know, that kind of looks like it's also a cork. That's my call.
That could be a cork.
I like Neil's answer. I hope Neil's answer is true.
All right. Now we only have two more to go. Now I'm going to break a rule where I'm, for the most part, try not to read like praise about me. And I'm going to read it because it's going to 1, 2, 3, a nice email from one of our listeners, Randy, who wrote a really nice long email, but here's a 1, 2, 3, from him. Feels weird reading this. Okay. Joanna, your overwhelming level of commitment, hard work, and organization is impossible to miss. You anticipate the most important questions and themes, center them in the conversation, you push yourself harder than you need to make the show work, whether you're booking stellar guests, engaging with the community, or tackling all the different ways people feel about Jack. Neil, your thoughtful recaps set us up for a great discussion and always poke just the right amount of fun at the episode. You make sure your co-hosts feel heard and validated. You embody all of the good vibes and positivity that one could draw from a Lost rewatch. If the podcast ever needs a timeless protector, we know in our hearts that it must be you. Dave, all of your work you put into the final production of the podcast probably feels thankless at times, but your precision and thoughtfulness are essential to the show. Your technical expertise often gives us a deeper understanding of the production, and it's fun to hear how passionate you are about it. I even appreciate your commitment to providing an alternate perspective. Even when I haven't been on your side of a take, I've generally appreciated the challenge to consider different perspectives. Thank you. From Randy. So,
yay! Aww.
Now it's dusty in California.
All right. Criticism through conflict. I like that. Thank you, Randy.
I just thought that was really nice. Okay, last thing. This is from one of our listeners, Sarah, about our listeners. When Lost originally aired, I could spend all night talking about it. Sure, I love the mysteries, but it was the people and their motivations that captivated me. I could talk all night about Lost. I wanted to hear everyone's theories. The more scholarly, the better. I wanted to discuss the book Sawyer was reading and discuss the constant play between light and dark, love and loneliness. But eventually, your friends want to talk about something else or go home. The storm has filled that 15-year void for me. Discussion that dug deep in the corners. And you have maybe the smartest, most thoughtful listeners. The viewer mail captivated me. These were my people, although much, much smarter. It is an honor to feel part of that group when I listen, even though I'm listening to episodes more than a year old. So Sarah's a little behind and she's watching with her daughter, who's 12, I think.
Were we gross on the podcast? Probably.
Well, her daughter is basically Sarah was talking about being like trapped at home with her kiddos and her husband, and it was just a lot. And then her daughter was like, let's do a watch project. And she's like, Sarah was like, let's watch Lost. And Sarah sneaks off when she can and listens to the storm. And then she shares the calm with her daughter, is watching the show with her daughter. So, but I wanted to end with that nice compliment to our listeners who really do make, what we do incredibly special to me. So, do you guys have any nice things you want to say about our listeners?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons, there was no way for us to predict when we started Lost that we were going to be doing this through a pandemic, which I think, definitely, I guess, helped a lot more people find the time to engage with a show like Lost on a rewatch. But the impetus of this project was that we had so enjoyed our experience with the people who listened to us when we were covering Game of Thrones, that I think that it was worth fighting to figure out what to do next, because we didn't want to lose those conversations. And I am deeply thankful that so many of them came along with us to Lost. And I'm really, really, really warms my heart to know that so many of them are anxious to come with us on the next adventure, because that's what it's for. I mean, I would probably jump on the phone for a couple hours with my two friends, either way, but,
that's us.
Yeah. That's you guys. But I think, one of the things that makes it that much more special is that the other people that we get to share it with, and the other people that, listen to us and have joined our Patreon and the Slack, and it blows my mind that so many wonderful people care about what we have to say.
I think when we started this podcast, if we scroll all the way back to the beginning of the feed, it was three friends want to talk about Game of Thrones, and then also specifically with Joanna, I was listening to her on a Game of Thrones podcast being like, why aren't they letting Joanna use all of her knowledge? She's prepping and she's making gifts, and then she goes on a podcast. They're like, well, okay, we can't talk about that prep and gifts, though. And I'm like, what the hell? So definitely spotlighting my co-host. But yeah, the discovery of the Lost iteration of the storm, I think, is definitely the listeners and the people. Over Game of Thrones, we use that period, I think all three of us, to toot my own horn a little bit, to get better at what we did. But Game of Thrones was a gigantic pool of which we were some fish in there. So it was amazing to go to Lost, which was something that nobody had to rewatch. It was on Hulu, but like that's just in North America. And, there's lots of stuff on Hulu that we're not doing watches with. So originally, I think I was nervous that this project would dwindle down to just us talking about shows we liked again. I wasn't against it, but I thought that maybe it would be a step down from where we ended Thrones, doing live shows and like that sort of thing. It might have been the end of live shows, no, by no fault of ours. They will be coming back, but I was amazed at, you guys, the listeners, rising up to meet the challenge. Like, this podcast would have been completely different without you, because we used to just podcast as selfish people, like we were on the phone with each other. But now we want to make sure that different people's perspectives are heard. Especially, I think we had some really good conversations about how women and minorities are depicted on television, how disabled people are depicted on television, all through like Lost, obviously. We went to the George Floyd protests alongside Mr. Echo. We had some great conversations. But that's all from...
I can't believe that happened. I still can't believe that happened.
That's, well, in that entire month, really, where even in our Slack, where our subscribers could go to talk to each other, the Slack could have become a cesspool like the rest of the world, but everybody was very nice and taking care of each other and like doing their best to try to educate while being nice and help other throughs and let people navigate away from using accidentally hurtful language. The listeners developed this podcast into what it is. And so I'm super happy that it's going to exist on a feed forever. And so people could swoop in and get the cream of the crop that we managed to pass on to you, but also pat on the back for you guys that got here with us in real time, because you are secret content machines.
It's true. I mean, I don't love calling you content machines, but I agree with
the- Well, I mean, they don't know how important a content machine is to people like us, really.
It's true. It's
That's
true.
Like me saying you're my heart, essentially.
They're the real constants.
Yeah, there we go.
I had a friend of mine who does what we do elsewhere, and she was like, she put out a – oh, I'll just say who it is because people know her, Mallory over at The Ringer. She put out a – like, I think it was like a two-hour podcast about the Spider-Man trailer. It was really long. And I was like, Mallory, a two-hour podcast with Spider-Man trailer, congratulations. She goes, what can I say? I love content. I was like, yeah, put it on my tombstone. I love content. This is a trick I learned from Dave Chen. Dave Chen is the one who taught me that like reading listener emails was an incredible way to better understand the show, because you can bring in people's expertise on various things that you know shit all about. And excuse my French, Sarah's 12-year-old.
I'm sure if she's gotten this far, that's the least bad we've been.
and as Dave said, various perspectives and stuff like that. And it just like the communal way in which podcasting has helped me watch TV. Like that's the thing. Like, there's so many great podcasts out there, and there are a lot of great TV watching and TV rewatching podcasts, but there's a style of podcasting where the person who's podcasting is just invested in like broadcasting their opinion, and that's fine. And there's a ton of successful podcasts that do that. But what I love about our work that three of us do together and the work I do with Dave Chen and Kristen Russo, blah, 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 is that fostering of a community, and that it just feels like, it feels like a dialogue. And that is so much more interesting to me. It helps me be a much better viewer. And I know that I wouldn't understand these shows as well as I do were not for the constant input and feedback from our listeners, who I brag about you guys all the time. You know, and there's like, you guys are so smart. And that makes me really happy. And sometimes I hear mailbags on other shows, and I don't know, maybe they're just like picking the wrong emails or whatever, but like their listeners aren't going as deep as you guys go. And I love how deep you guys get. So we love you. And yeah, please do come with us wherever we go next. We want to keep you. So that's all I have to say about the mailbag.
All right. I guess that's going to wrap it up for us this week. We are going to have more content coming for you on this feed, as Joanna teased at the top. We got apparently more Damon. We got some other stuff planned. We're going to do some superlatives, Game of Thrones style, probably. We got stuff. We're going to be here. We're glad you're here with us. Neil, where can people find you online outside of here? It should they want to. Should they not have all the hurly of the storm that they need at this point?
Well, you can always get my work over at filmschoolrejects.com, and I'm far less hurly these days on Twitter at Rejects, but I'm working on it. You guys inspire me to be a little more like hurly every day. Keep following @StormPodcast on the Twitter, because you know everything that the answer to your number one question will eventually be there on that Twitter feed. What's happening next? So, yeah.
And Joanna Robinson.
Yeah, you can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. We are currently covering American Crime Story, impeachment on the Still Watching podcast. So had a great chat with the head writer, Sarah Burgess. I've got a chat upcoming with the fantastic, iconic Judith Light, et cetera. So, you know, we're doing all of that over there. And hopefully, you know, I'll see you guys in Slack.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where I broadcast my opinions without taking listener feedback. So don't worry about all that stuff we just said. Like, they're different strokes for different blokes. And here at the end of the podcasts on this feed, with a whole bunch of warnings just for living a better life. Obviously, don't fall down. Falling down is very dangerous, no matter what your age group. But, like, unless you're like a toddler and you're sort of, you got to get some bumps in. Even then, not advising falling down. Wear sunscreen, I've been told, and bug spray, especially if you're in the jungle watching Lost on a square television, which I now am thinking I might be able to make happen for myself. And very important, don't get involved in white men's posthumous bullshit. We will see you next week.